Listen to WGN Radio's newest podcast, Behind the Badge, Illinois, hosted by David Hochberg. Behind the Badge, Illinois views current events through the eyes of Illinois law enforcement leaders. Tune in. Visit WGNradio.com/behindthebadge.
Alan has spent decades in film, TV, and on stage. Some of Alan's most memorable roles include Cameron Frye and John Hughes' film Ferris Bueller's Day Off, as well as television roles as Stewart on the ABC sitcom Spin City, and of course, Conor Roy on the HBO series Succession, the latter earning him a Primetime Emmy and Golden Globe nomination, and part of the cast win for the Screen Actors Guild Award for Outstanding Performance by an Ensemble. He's a Midwest guy that spent his college years at the University of Illinois, and after graduation, moved up to Chicago, where he returns next Thursday at the Auditorium Theater, presenting a special showing of John Hughes' classic Ferris Bueller's Day Off, featuring a Q&A with Alan, and hosted by me. Ticketmaster.com has your tickets, and to talk about it all is Alan Rock. Alan, welcome in.
Hey, how are you?
I am great. Back in Chicago on stage next Thursday. You know, hitting the road, talking to audiences about this classic film and screening it, it's something you've enjoyed, haven't you?
Yeah. It's kind of amazing to me that after all these years, people still enjoy this movie. And the truth is, I mean, I've watched it a few times now, and it holds up.
It does hold up.
Yeah, and so I think a lot of John Hughes stuff holds up, and I know that Bueller holds up very well. So I'm really happy to be part of something that people still enjoy. They enjoyed when it came out, and then, you know, younger people have discovered it along the way. So it's very easy to be me. I'm a lucky guy.
You're a lucky guy. I was going to say, yeah. You know, it was definitely a growing up film for me, you know, getting out of high school, going to college and so forth. But then my kids have discovered it. And you're right about the different generations, especially so many of these John Hughes films. And for those of us living into Chicago, they're important movies to us.
Yeah, I think so. I mean, John, he loved Chicago with his whole heart, you know, and I think all of his films are kind of a love letter to Chicago, and Ferris Bueller definitely is. I mean, just, you know, all the different places we go in the movie, it's a celebration of what a great town it is. I mean, a fabulous place to live, and I was lucky to live there for 5 years. I got out of school at the U of I, and I came right up to Chicago, and that's where I got started. That's where everything started for me.
What neighborhood did you live in when you moved here?
All over the North Side. I lived, my first apartment was on Armitage.
Oh, yeah.
Near Sheffield.
Okay.
But it wasn't so fancy back then.
Okay, fair enough.
It's definitely moved up, that neighborhood. But this is quite a while ago. This is 1979, 1980. But that was my first apartment. And then I lived in, Uptown. Friends and I rented out half of a duplex. It was the nicest place I ever lived in Chicago. Half of a duplex on Junior Terrace was the name of the street. And it was, we were just a block from the lake. And Uptown at that point was still a little tough.
Yeah.
You know, a little tough, but we lived in a very nice block in a very nice apartment. Then I lived way up in Rogers Park.
Very good. Very, very good. Well, you know, I was going to say, you know, this movie, and most of the cast didn't think it was going to be a hit at the time. I mean, you guys were talking about it, like, yeah, we saw the screening. Maybe all the soundtrack parts weren't put into this thing yet. Not sure.
We weren't sure. I mean, but actors, you know, I mean, when you show an actor a movie, like the first time they see themselves in whatever movie they worked on, all that actor is going to be thinking about is their performance and basically doing a post-mortem. Like, yeah. I shouldn't have done that. I should have done this. Right. Why did I make that face? Is that really what I look like when I walk? You know, I mean, just we're a self-involved bunch.
maybe a little.
You know, as a general rule.
Yeah.
So the first time I saw it was, you know, the soundtrack was not sweetened. All the music was not in there. And I saw it with Mia and Jennifer Grey and Jeffrey Jones was there, and we saw a rough cut of it. And we were all kind of mortified. You know, we just wow. didn't know what to make of it. But that movie didn't come out until June, late June. And this was like in March sometime. We saw it, and it was still, you know, it was not completely put together. But so we had no idea. We just thought, well, better luck next time.
Well, what's funny about that is, like, really earlier in your career, you see how much, you know, a team effort is made to put a movie together, right? The soundtrack is so important. The editing is so important. And
everything,
right? Yeah.
It takes a huge group of people with entirely different skill sets to put a motion picture together. And it's one of my favorite places to be in the world. I mean, this is my top three. In bed with my wife. We don't have to be making out. Just in bed with my wife.
Yeah.
That's number one, you know.
Yeah.
Number two is doing anything with my kids, hopefully with all four of them together. That's the best.
Yeah, it's important.
And my third favorite place to be in the world is on a film set. But not any film set. A film set where I have a part to play.
Yeah. No question.
Because I go visit my wife, you know, when she does things. And everybody's really nice to me, but I don't belong there. You know, it's not, I don't have a job to do.
Oh,
but
you visit your wife. That's great.
Yeah,
that's
great. Yeah. But a film set is a wonderful business to be in, and it takes so many different people with so many different talents to put the whole thing together. I was lucky to fall into it, you know, and I enjoy it to this day.
Do you remember the audition for the movie for Ferris Bueller?
Yeah, I do. I had actually met John, in probably like 1982 or 83 in Chicago. He was going to do The Breakfast Club as kind of an indie. And I went in and I auditioned for Bender, you know, for the Judd Nelson part at that point. And then during that week, he met Molly Ringwald and he put The Breakfast Club on the back burner. And he wrote 16 Candles for her over a weekend. That's how fast he was.
I know.
And and so then, of course, that happened. And then The Breakfast Club. And then by the time Bueller happened, he'd already done Pretty in Pink. That was in the can. And so I was in New York. I was working on Broadway with Broderick. And I went and I auditioned for the casting directors because they were a little worried about my age. And I went in, they're like, oh, yeah, he looks really young. And then my next audition was with Matthew for John Hughes. And so,
wow.
I mean, Matthew and I had just spent 6 months together.
Biloxi Blues, right?
On the road in a play. Yeah. And so we were already pals and we shared a similar sense of humor. And then I had known John a little bit, just, you know, it wasn't the first time I met him. So it couldn't have been an easier audition. It was just, it was playtime, you know.
But
it was joyous.
But you said how quickly these films get written. He wrote Bueller, I think, in less than a week, and he shot it. You guys shot it in 3 months. And you were mentioning your age, 29, playing a teenager. And I want to say that's pretty typical in Hollywood. Like Henry Winkler was 28 when he played the Fonz, when he was supposed to be a teenager. But that works, and it works in a lot of films.
Well, I mean, it worked for me at that time because I truly looked like I didn't look fully formed. You know, I didn't look fully human. Okay. I definitely didn't look like a 29-year-old man. I think these days, I think they tend to cast teenagers as teenagers. I don't think they do the
it's true.
The older actor thing anymore.
It's different now.
But it doesn't matter because I am definitely no longer a teenage actor.
That's right. You are not.
Things have changed.
You know, I dug up the fact you were mentioning Matthew and Jennifer Grey. I dug up a fact that really surprised me that I literally, like, I feel like I know a lot about these movies. And during the filming, there was, like, love all over the set. Like, Matthew Broderick, Jennifer Grey, who played his sister, by the way, got engaged before the movie's release. And then Ferris's parents met on the set of the movie, and they got married and had kids.
Yeah, yeah.
Wild.
Lyman Ward and Cindy Pickett. Yeah.
Yeah.
Terrific people. Very funny. Wonderful people. And I mean, you know, I mean, as is true in Hollywood, they weren't nearly old enough to have
parents like that, right?
Maybe teenage kids, but definitely not old enough to be Broderick's parents. But because I think Cindy was still in her 30s. I think she was in her like mid 30s. And when Matthew made the movie, I think he was 24, 23 or 24.
Yeah.
But anyway,
Yeah, that's funny.
Movie magic.
I love that. Well, we will talk a lot more about Ferris next Thursday, May 2nd, the Auditorium Theater. And again, tickets are at Ticketmaster.com. And there's more with Alan next on 720 WGN. All right, we're talking to actor Alan Ruck, HBO Succession, Ferris Bueller's Day Off. We're talking about him coming back to Chicago next Thursday. So you got into the acting business. You were seriously like in school, and I read this about you, miserable in school, had trouble concentrating, not that much into sports, and you really wanted to find some kind of identity for yourself. So where did acting come into play? Like, why was that the place?
Well, my older sister, my high school had a really good theater department. Mm-hmm. And a working class suburb. I mean, not a fancy yeah. Suburb, working class, but there was a lot of money for schools back then because there was so much industry. And this was right outside Cleveland, Ohio. We had steel mills and automobile plants and everything that goes along with those industries. So there were lots of jobs and lots of people working hard and paying taxes. And the politicians felt compelled to give the money back to the people in some way. They didn't want to, but mm-hmm. they felt like they had to. Right. So the way they did it was education. So we had a school system with every sports team you can imagine, every music program you can imagine, every after-school club. And unfortunately, my high school has just been torn down, my old high school.
Oh, isn't that a bummer? Mine too, actually.
It was only 70 years old. It was a beautiful old building, but it had never been properly maintained. And anyway... long story. That's a whole nother story. But we had two theaters. We had an auditorium and we had a smaller theater that sat about 300 people. And as an English elective, you could take an acting class and you could also take play production classes. And when you were a senior, you could take something called arts seminar, which you where you studied art history, music history, and theater history. And my sister had been in plays before me. She was 4 years older than me. I watched her do that, and I just somehow, you know, I was maybe like 11 or 12 at the time. I watched her do that stuff, and I just kind of put it in my hip pocket. I just thought, I think mm-hmm. I can do that. Mm-hmm. Wow. And then, you know, I went through the whole junior high misery. And
it is misery.
Like you mentioned, I was not any kind of an athlete. I couldn't concentrate. Puberty really messed me up with academics. And I just had no identity. I just didn't know who I was. And you know, you could become invisible pretty quickly in sort of the high school, junior high school culture. And so then when I found acting, I took that first acting class and I just knew I was home. I just knew that was it.
That's great.
Yeah. Yeah.
Well, and then you went to University of Illinois, so back to Chicago, you know, for your BFA. And I just had I had Dan Aykroyd on recently, and I had read once that you got to watch the Blues Brothers being filmed when you lived here.
I mean, it was maybe the first month. It had to be the first month that I was in Chicago. So this was like September of 79, something like that. And not far from where I was living, I was walking somewhere. I don't know where I was going or what I was doing. But I looked across, which was kind of like a park. Or it seemed like it was baseball fields in my memory. And I saw a guy in sunglasses and a black hat walking along with some other dude who had like really long hair and a mustache. And some other guy in the street said, "Hey, that's Dan Aykroyd." And they were just grabbing. I don't even know if they had a permit to do it, but knowing those Blues Brothers guys, maybe they just were stealing a scene. Yeah, but it was Dan Aykroyd and some other actor some, you know, people with a camera, and they were just grabbing some footage of them walking along, you know, in Chicago. That's funny. You know, immediately I was like, "Oh my God.
Yeah.
They make movies here.
Yeah.
They make movies here."
Yeah.
Yeah. And Blues Brothers really opened it up for Chicago, because the Hollywood people came and they saw this beautiful city, really photogenic city. And a lot of commercials were being shot there at the time. So there were all the equipment houses you could ever need, all the crew people you could ever need, the labs to develop the film. Everything was right there.
Yeah.
And then there's a huge theater scene in Chicago, all these actors who were available to play all the small parts so they didn't have to bring everybody in from New York or Los Angeles. So it was a find for Hollywood.
Sure.
And that opened it up. And for about the next 10 years, Chicago was a go-to film location town.
Yeah, we still are. I mean, we really still are. And it's funny.
Well, I know you guys make a lot of TV shows there.
Yeah,
now.
We do. It's more TV than movies. You're absolutely right. But, you know, it was like back in then, and just a little history here, but like back in the early 1900s, there was no Hollywood. We were making – all the movies were being made here. And Charlie Chaplin was making movies here until they said, hey, we can't film from November pretty much through the end of March. We got to go somewhere warm and do this. But it took them almost 80 years to shoot back over here, you know?
Well, but you got him back, and that's the main thing.
We got him back. We absolutely got him back. We are talking to Alan Ruck. Alan will be back in Chicago Thursday, May 2nd at the Auditorium Theater, presenting a special showing of the John Hughes classic Ferris Bueller's Day Off with a Q&A, and I'll be on stage with him as well. You can get tickets at Ticketmaster.com. There's more with Alan after the news next here on 720 WGN. We're talking to Alan Ruck, HBO Succession, Ferris Bueller's Day Off, where he will be back in Chicago Thursday, May 2nd at the Auditorium Theater, presenting a special showing of the John Hughes classic Ferris Bueller's Day Off. Tickets are at Ticketmaster.com. So, Succession, what an incredible, amazing, meaty role for you.
I know. It's funny because when I auditioned for that show, the email that they sent over from the agency said, not in line to inherit the company. This part will grow over time. Now I thought, well, you know, that's good enough for me.
And it's intriguing. I like that. Yeah.
Yeah. And so I got the job, and then the first season, very exciting. And I had some stuff to do. And then in the second season, the truth is there was so much story to tell. And the story was called Succession. It was not called the brain-damaged, mopey older guy, you know. The story was mostly about Logan and then, you know, the golden trio of Kendall and Roman and Siobhan and, you know, all the other sort of vultures hanging around waiting to see, you know, who is going to get the keys to the kingdom. So in the second season, I didn't have a lot to do, and my ego got in the way, and I got a little downhearted, you know. And what really kind of sealed it for me was I was out here in L.A. I wasn't needed in New York, so I came home, and some friend of a friend said, "Oh, dude, there's this show. I bet you would love it. It's called Succession." And I said, "Yeah, yeah, I'm on that show." And this guy says, "Oh, you wish." And I said, "No, I'm on that show." And this guy said, "No, you're not. I haven't seen you on it." Yeah. And I guess he came into it, you know, like at the beginning of the second season or whatever. So I got really bummed out. And I actually went to our head writer and our top director. And I said, "You guys, why don't you kill me off?" I said, you know, somebody's got to die, right? Somebody's got to die in a show like this. I said, why didn't you kill me off, you know? And thankfully, and I'm, you know, grateful forever, they said, no, we need you. Don't worry. There's nothing right now, but there will be stuff for you down the road. And true to their word, you know, they delivered.
Absolutely did. I was going to say, the show is so incredibly deep, but there's so often I laughed out loud watching miserable people that are dysfunctional with money. That's fun.
Yeah, it's good. Yeah, it is good sport. It's one of the greatest indoor sports there is.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Well, I was going to say, like, you know, some shows, you know, provide a little more freedom when developing a character, like very early on. Did you have that freedom? Did producers welcome that, or did you kind of work in tandem with each other?
Yeah, Jesse Armstrong is brilliant, and he, our head writer and creator, and he hired the most glorious bunch of people to populate his writer's room. They were all award-winning playwrights and people who had developed shows on their own in here, in the States and in England. And, you know, I would come up with ideas and I'd bounce them off, and Jesse was always like, "Interesting, you know, let's have a think about that." He would say, "Let's have a think about that." And, so, And I was free to create my own backstory. I mean, Jesse would drop little hints along the way. You know, he'd say, I don't think Connor's mother is on the planet anymore. So, but he didn't go into too much detail. And then there would be a line like, Roman said in one episode about my mom, oh, boo-hoo, mommy's in the crazy house or something like that. So there were little hints along the way. And what you do as an actor is you take all these hints from the writers and then you fill in the gaps with your imagination and you come up with the story you need to, make yourself believe what you're doing in any given scene.
Love that. I love hearing that. I love hearing that for sure. You talked about the exceptional writer's room and I agree with you wholeheartedly, but you had an exceptional ensemble that co-starred with you, right?
Yeah. Oh my God. They're all off right now. I'm in Los Angeles. My wife is actually in New York working on a movie, but most of my castmates are scattered around the globe working on plays. Wow. Jeremy, I don't know if they're still running, but he just did, it might still be going, the Enemy of the People in New York City. Brian Cox is doing Long Day's Journey into Night in London. Sarah Snook is doing a play about a one-woman show about Oscar Wilde. She plays 26 different characters.
Oh my God.
She's doing that in London right now. Wow. And then my other pals, Jay Smith Cameron is going to go off to London in the fall to work opposite Mark Rylance in a play called Juno and the Paycock. I mean, and a whole bunch of other folks in New York, just, you know.
You're staying connected. I can tell.
They're just, it's great. I mean, we are staying connected and people are just getting real busy. They're doing a lot of theater right now. An amazing group of people. And like down to the smallest part. I mean, we shot mostly in New York City. And, you know, I mean, there's just all these fabulous theater actors that live there. And we just had our pick of the litter. You know, we just had like the best people we could possibly find were available. It was lucky. Again,
you've had a great career karma. So far, my friend. Yes, you have.
Yeah,
Alan, we'll be back in Chicago Thursday, May 2nd at the Auditorium Theater, presenting a special showing of the John Hughes classic Ferris Bueller's Day Off with a Q&A. I'll be on stage with Alan as well, and you can get tickets at Ticketmaster.com. Alan, I look forward to chatting with you in person, and we're going to have some fun.
Absolutely. I look forward to it.